Hour 3 of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. So Tommy Lahren comes to town, has an event at the Pantages Theater, decides to go out with her mom for a nice brunch. Somebody recognizes her, one of Minneapolis's more tolerant liberals recognizes her and decides, hey, I'm gonna get Snapchat famous. Throws a drink on her, posts it on Snapchat with all sorts of laughing. Somebody else starts videoing it, starts calling her all sorts of curse words, swearing at her. He posts that on Instagram. He gets a little Instagram famous. Had something like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of comments and likes and everything when I looked at it yesterday afternoon. And I don't know. I mean, is there no sense of embarrassment? Is there no sense of shame? She's just a human being who happens to hold some opinions, goes on TV and says them every once in a while. You don't have to agree with her. You don't even have to like her. But treat her with a little bit of just basic human respect when she's going out enjoying a meal with her mother.
It's not even like, not that this would justify it, but like even if she's at an event and she's talking and she's saying something in front of you that suddenly gets you upset. I mean, that wouldn't justify any kind of provocation of somebody just expressing right. their free speech. But this wasn't even, I mean, you weren't even there.
Right.
You weren't even there. This was just a person. And the fact that the people there and then to have Mike Mullen in the City Pages to take it even further in commenting about how it was unprovoked, to have him respond, yeah, unprovoked except for the things that she says in public. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like George Costanza from Seinfeld, where it's like, you know, we're living in a society. That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah. There's a Snapchat of this. I think it's a Snapchat. It might be an Instagram video. I don't know. I don't care either way. But of the incident occurring, it was obviously taken by somebody who was at the table with the person who threw the water. And the caption reads, throws a drink on Tommy Lahren. Ha, 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 ha. Thanks for the screenshots. I did it. LOL. And then there's another video on Instagram that I mentioned of the guy just calling her F-word after F-word after B-word after calling her a hoe, calling her all sorts of horrible things, you know, and saying, get out of here. We don't want you here. I mean, just that there should be a palpable sense of embarrassment and shame
right
now, but there isn't. There's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of saying she deserved it. There's a tweet from the deputy communications director at Minnesota DFL. Mocking this and having fun with it.
Okay. What?
I'll give credit to Tommy. That little splash of water would have knocked Ben Shapiro out.
Yeah. Wow.
Deputy communications director at Minnesota.
So we're just open. We are just being open about advocating for violence against individuals simply because you disagree with what they say.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
If you're a conservative, you're an outspoken conservative, and you find yourself at having a meal in Minneapolis, this might happen.
Wow.
This might happen. The mayor of Minneapolis hasn't made any comment about it that I can see, and it would be nice if he would, because this is embarrassing. And I actually have found out. I got a little information. The girl who threw the drink was a temporary employee of the Senate DFL. She was a DFL page.
Wow.
Someone at the Senate heard her bragging about it on Monday.
I really am for what we do. I really am kind of speechless. I would love for anybody to give us a call 651-989-5855 or even just use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter and try to justify to us why this was okay. Try to explain why an individual who is a national media figure who just
a young woman who just
expresses her opinion deserves to be attacked, however, whatever extreme you want to put on that, unprovoked. And also have a City Pages article written where the justification is because they don't like the things that she says. Please, 651-989-5855. I really would like to hear the rational argument and justification for that type of mentality and action.
I sent a tweet out. I tweeted the author of the article, Mike Mullen from the City Pages, and I said, question, based on your implication that the water-tossing incident with Tommy Lahren was indeed provoked, because that's the little little snide joke that he made in the article. He said, oh, it was unprovoked. Well, except for all the things she said on TV. So based on the implication that this was indeed provoked, is it acceptable for people who may have taken offense of something you've written to treat you the same way if you were to go out to a meal?
Yeah. If he says it is, then great. Then okay,
at least
fine.
He's consistent.
At least he's consistent.
That's the bar now, yeah. Right? You disagree with somebody and you see him out in public, throw a drink at him.
Prediction, it's going to be, oh, you took me too literally. That's my prediction.
651-989-5855. Ruth in Eagan. Good morning.
Hi. I noticed something in the article, and it would be great if you could reread the little part where they talked about her Norwegian heritage.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta track it back down again. But go ahead with your comment.
Okay. Now, to me, that sounded pretty racist. Disparaging her ancestors and just making these assumptions that they're stupid farm folk that couldn't wrap their head around simple things because they're Norwegian.
Yeah, here's the last part of Mike Mullen's article in the City Pages. It says just last week, City Pages. This is the entire paragraph. Brought you the story of Tomi Lahren's uncovered Minnesota roots, which tie her back to immigrant ancestors, Norwegians who spoke little or no English. We suspect that those simple farm folk would have trouble wrapping their heads around almost every single aspect of this more recent event. Downtown, rooftop, dining, brunch, Instagram, purposefully spilling any amount of potable water, and perhaps most curious of all, just why this mean young descendant of theirs is so well known.
Could you get more racist?
Thanks for your call, Ruth.
Yeah.
Replace Norwegian with any brown race.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I know. No, you're right.
You would seriously have bricks flying through the local Starbucks,
right,
and people laying on the freeway.
Well, look at it this way. I mean, replace Tomi Lahren. Replace this happening to Tomi Lahren to happening to Nkema Levy-Pounds.
Right.
Nkema right. Levy-Pounds is easy. having brunch in, yep, Minneapolis, and somebody throws a drink at her because they disagree with public comments that she's made and stances she's,
yep,
taken.
Yep. Well, we've been down, and won't get into all the details. We've been down this road before. This is something that has existed. This double standard and hypocrisy has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It used to be more reserved for your activist level actions. This is when you normally would see it. You'd normally see it when it comes to activist groups, when they go out and they protest. That's where you normally would see it. However, we live now in a world where this type of mentality has reached into sort of the public sphere where people believe it's acceptable now. This is no different than when we talked about the Cheesecake Factory and the individual who went to the Cheesecake Factory wearing the MAGA hat and ended up being accosted by the people that worked at the Cheesecake Factory.
Employees.
They felt justified in doing so. And you want to talk about this bubble? I mean, this is really disturbing. You know, I could understand, like, Mike Mullen in the City Pages writing the article, poking fun at Tomi Lahren, not liking her for what she says, but at least stepping forward and saying the right thing of, this is not representative of the people of Minnesota. She has a right to her free speech, and in this circumstance, she was simply, perhaps even with her mother, just enjoying a lunch in Minneapolis.
Which apparently you can't do.
Right.
You can't do.
If you're a conservative woman.
Aaron in Eagan, good morning, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I'm just calling in because I actually know the girl that posted that Snapchat video, which isn't something I'm super proud of, but she posted originally, if I get 5 screenshots on this, I'll dump a drink on Tommy. And apparently she got the 5 screenshots because then she posted the video of her throwing that drink, and I just go, do you understand that you just assaulted a human being? An actual human being.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who your views are, but because she is a conservative, her views don't matter to you.
Wow.
Wow. That's embarrassing.
It really is.
I'm just embarrassed. I mean, it's just, I feel bad. You know, we had Tommy on the show. I've reached out to her people and I've asked, you know, hey, we'd like the opportunity to follow up with her and, you know, maybe, you know, for what little it would matter at this point, because if I'm Tommy Lahren, I'm probably never coming back to Minneapolis. But what little it would matter, I'd like to apologize on behalf of Minneapolis. It would be nice if maybe the mayor or some other, you know, some leadership would step up and say, this is an unacceptable way to treat visitors to our city. So she did it for Snapchat fame, huh?
Is that a thing? Sam, is Snapchat fame a thing?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. It is. There's people who are famous just because of their Snapchats.
It is truly astonishing to see that we've arrived at this particular place.
This is okay.
I don't get it. I really don't.
It's not even okay. It's hilarious. I mean, if you look at some of the reaction online, if you look at some of the reaction on social media, it's hilarious. I mean, this is great that we did that. I mean, you got the deputy communications director of the DFL tweeting about it. This woman was apparently, from what I've been able to gather, worked for the Senate DFL. This is great. And this is what happens when you conflate rhetoric with violence.
Right.
When you treat people who have different opinions and who don't share your beliefs, when you treat their words like they're acts of violence, it's a very insidious and dangerous sort of subconscious connection that people can make, where you start equating that so often that they feel that it is okay to react to words and opinions that you don't like with physical assaults.
In 2009, this idea of civility came about, and it was in the wake of the shooting of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. You know, we've talked about it on the show. It was in the wake of individuals who were going to town hall meetings and raising their voice. And you had all these cries, you know, when Obama was in office of, you know, we need to elevate the conversation, the political conversation. We need to be better than this. We need to be more civilized. And the National Institute of Civility opens up on a university campus, and you have all of these individuals coming out. We just need to be better. Okay. That at the time, many of us sat back and called it out for what it was. It was nothing but a lie. It was simply a means to silence the right and conservative voices from being allowed to speak. That's what it was all disguised in. And what we see now, in example after example after example, is how so many of us who called out that those calls for civility as exactly what they were, because that does not exist anymore. This is where we have arrived. If you have a difference of opinion with another human being, you now have apparently in your mind the right to unprovokedly go and accost an individual simply because you disagree
just
with them.
Just for existing.
It was all just a sham and a lie.
Sorry, you're not allowed to go out and enjoy a meal with your mom because I disagree with you.
Right.
You know, you're not allowed to have a nice, pleasant experience in Minneapolis because I disagree with you. And it's going to get me a lot of likes on Snapchat or whatever they do on Snapchat. I don't know. Don in St. Paul, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm surprised everybody is surprised. I mean, you had the liberal who shot up a Republican softball game, and you had Rand Paul got the snot beat out, and it turns out that guy was an occupier.
Well, Don, let me stop you real quick. I am surprised, okay? And I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but I am surprised because you have those other circumstances, and those are bad in and of themselves. Okay, obviously they are. Okay. That's clear. But this is different in my opinion in respect of these are average, ordinary individuals that don't have, that's not to justify the horrible acts that other people have committed. But this is to say that we've now reached the level where it's become almost an accepted norm. We rightly condemn the individuals who go out there and commit acts of violence because of their political beliefs and the fact they disagree with somebody, right? We rightly go and condemn those individuals and we hold them accountable. What you have here are circumstances where it's reached the level where you are now just in general allowed to go and attack somebody. Mm-hmm. And it will be, at least in the immediacy, widely accepted by everybody around you, from the people who prompted you to go and dump this water on Tommy Lahren to an article writer, an editorial writer, Mike Mullen in the City Pages. So it is different. I am surprised. This is disgusting. And if this is where we're heading for as a society, we are in deep, deep trouble. It is disturbing to me that Mike Mullen in the City Pages would actually try to justify that a woman simply enjoying a lunch could be attacked for no reason.
Yeah, just out to lunch with her mom in Minneapolis, get water thrown on her because people disagree with her. It's unacceptable. This should be unacceptable. What if it happens to anybody? And I don't care what you think of Tommy Lahren, whether you like her, love her, hate her. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. She's a human being, and as far as I know, she hasn't caused harm to anybody.
What if you're at a comedy club and the comedian goes and does a joke that offends you, so you can just toss your drink at him now?
Yeah, apparently.
And you can just throw it at him, justify it. I didn't like what you said. That was a bad joke, and I don't agree with your politics.
Got some more people that want to chime in on this. 651-989-5855. Plus, Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, man.
The show in just about 20 minutes. Looking forward to that. Look, you don't have to like Tommy Lahren. You don't have to be a fan of Tommy Lahren. You can disagree with Tommy Lahren. You can be bothered and offended by the things that she's said on TV. But that doesn't give you the right nor the justification to throw water on her.
Yeah.
When she's out enjoying a meal in public with her mom. It would be nice, is all I'm saying. It would be nice if somebody in some sort of leadership from the left would come out and at the very least express a tiny bit of embarrassment that this happened here in Minneapolis.
Well,
you get either silence or cheering it on or mocking it. That's it. That's all you're getting.
I personally don't even need anybody in leadership to do that. I don't need anybody to even draw political lines on it, at a bare minimum. I don't, and this is me personally, I don't care to have somebody go and apologize for this jerk's actions. But what I don't want to see is what we are seeing, and that is that the response swirling around it of it being promoted, of Mike Mullen in the City Pages trying to find justification in commenting how it was unprovoked by those that were there, but then establishing unprovoked. But what about all these things that she says on national television, trying to make a connection that it was okay? That to me is where the line gets crossed. I don't need anybody to apologize, except for maybe the person that did it.
That would be nice.
But my goodness, to sit back and, I mean, it's not like an old curmudgeon, my goodness, but I don't know. I'm beside myself at how this is suddenly now an acceptable societal norm.
And I'll read you the paragraph from Mike Mullen's article, who is, I've decided now, a complete jerk. TMZ also passes along information from sources close to Tommy who report that the drink throwing was, quote, completely unprovoked. And then he adds, completely, except for like 500 things she said on national television. So now you say something
right,
national television or presumably in a City Pages article that offends you or that you're offended by or offend somebody. That is now, according to Mike Mullen, acceptable provocation.
So is it hear something, hit something? Is that where we're at now?
Right. Audrey in Columbia Heights, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to know what restaurant this happened in.
Union.
Oh, okay. See, I won't ever go there because of this.
Good.
Yeah.
I just think that the restaurant...
Although it's not really the restaurant's
fault. No, it's not their fault.
And I don't know how the restaurant responded.
Let it happen.
Well, you can't... What do you mean, let it happen? It's not like they knew it was going to happen ahead of time.
Not like the union employees are tasked with having to surround Tommy from getting accosted. And nobody expects this should happen.
And I have not seen any sort of follow-up on what happened to the people who did it. If union did the right thing and asked the people who did that to leave and apologize to Tommy, then union is completely off the hook. They can't they can't prevent something like that from happening. Greg in Columbia Heights, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Gentlemen, I don't like to go there with that thought, but if you really look into the history, the early part of the party that really went this way, the paramilitary party, was called the Stormtrooper, and Sturmjungstrom, which was in German, which was the early version of the brown shirts and the paramilitary that Hitler actually let rise up. And this is what happens when you have disagreements, but you take it to violence. that congratulations to all you DFLers who are listening to the sound of my voice. Your party is well on the way to the behavior of the stormtroopers and Nazis.
Nah, I just, you know, for me, I'm going to keep my stormtroopers resigned to Star Wars. Solo comes out tomorrow. I'm very excited.
It's not that different from what we've heard from Antifa, though.
Right. That's probably a more relevant example to what we're seeing right now.
Will and Chanhassen, go ahead.
The last caller was exactly right. This is exactly what will happen, and it's going to go down one of two paths. It's either going to stop, or it's going to get far worse. And if it gets far worse, there's going to be a reaction. It's either going to be people are going to roll over and take it, and the next thing we know, we're going to find ourselves with concentration camps filled with conservative talk show hosts.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's off the brakes.
I got a story here about robots being able to grow human organs. Can we switch gears now, please? All right. 651-989-5855. We have Sir Jeremy Piven joining us soon.
Give them any ideas. Yeah,
please. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. All right. A couple of stories here as we get ready for our guests coming up. Just a House of Comedy show is tonight. We'll have all the details, and we'll be joined by Jeremy Piven here coming up in a few minutes. First off, though, Drew, something you can relate to. Ready?
Yep.
Story comes out of the Washington Examiner. White House staff apparently tried to mirror President Trump's way of speaking when writing tweets for him, including using poor grammar, according to a report that was issued on Monday. Aides often employ exclamation points, will capitalize certain words, and utilize similar syntax when drafting tweets for the president, two sources familiar with the process told the Boston Globe. Now, in years gone by, when we worked together at another radio station, and I would write blogs, I was tasked with, when blogs were a big thing, had to write a blog every day, put it on the website, got to get those clicks. I was tasked with writing blogs for the website, for the show, to which I would often reach out to Drew afterwards and say, hey, Drew, could you go on the blog and make sure and fix my, any grammar errors that I might have employed or run on sentences? Because, I'm not very good at grammar. Well, you know what? I'm not really, really good at writing at all. Because basically, Drew was tasked with having to figure out the essence of what I was trying to say and then put it into cogent form for everybody else to read.
Yes. It was a fun hour and a half of every day. I really miss those times.
It was amazing when I'd go back and I'd read it and go, wow, I'm really good.
Oh, wait, I didn't write any.
These are great points. I think this is what John was trying to say. If a White House staffer would like Trump to address the subject on Twitter, the aide must compile a memo for the president that suggests several potential tweets. Now, again, you've got to put a big question mark on whether or not this is legit, right? It is kind of funny. Trump then selects his favorite or will occasionally make some edits before it's posted to his account. Although the bad grammar is specifically chosen for tweets, spelling errors are unintentional, one of the sources said. Tweets that are proposed are his voice, one source said the Boston Globe. You want to do it in a way that fits his style. The report comes after Trump's Twitter account tweeted over the weekend that First Lady Melania Trump had returned to the White House following kidney procedure, but incorrectly referred to her as Melanie. The tweet was deleted and replaced with the correct spelling of the first lady's name. You know, the one thing that I wish the president would do more often, I wish he would show he would expose his humor more often. It's just something I feel like we see sort of the sarcastic part of it. We certainly saw that on the campaign trail. I'm using that lightly, but you don't see him express humor all that often, and I think it would benefit him quite a bit. Maybe he doesn't have much of a sense of humor. I would think that he would.
It seems like he would,
but you don't see. You don't see it. You just don't see it very often when he communicates either via Twitter or otherwise.
Yeah,
I think it would behoove him if he did that more.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of like high profile sort of celebrity or business related accounts and things like that that are managed by multiple people. But a lot of times, what happens is if the person that the account is most closely linked with actually pens the tweet, they'll like put their initials on it or something.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if he did that.
Yeah,
I'd like to know which ones he actually, typed out on his phone laying in bed watching Fox and Friends in the morning, and which ones are put together by staffers.
Or listening to this show, because clearly he was this morning, because the moment we brought up Tomi Lahren earlier today, like right afterwards, he tweeted about
she's great, everybody loves her.
Everybody's behind Tomi.
Except for Minneapolitans.
Yeah, except for Minneapolis people on Snapchat, apparently. We talked quite a bit yesterday about how a recent study was done showing brain scans of different individuals and how you could look at the brain scan of two individuals and you could determine whether or not those people would be friends based off of how those scans reacted to visual stimulus. So basically showing that individuals who have similar tastes in what they're watching shows up in the brain scans, and you can actually go and look at them side by side before even introducing those two individuals if they've seen the same content, and you can find out, hey, they're going to be friends, which put us down a path of us being clones because we have a lot of the same sense of humor.
True.
Just sense of humor, though, not so much in movie tastes. I'm much more discerning in my movie tastes than Drew is.
No. No. We like a lot of the same movies.
Yeah. But I like a lot more movies.
But then there's this whole other world of movies out there that you love that I think are just awful. Although I will make a confession here.
Oh.
It was Saturday morning. I got up really early Saturday morning and just sort of felt like zoning out on the couch and playing with my phone a little bit and putting something silly on the TV. So I'm flipping around on Hulu looking at their movie selection, and I watched a movie called Planet of the Sharks.
Oh, okay.
It was god awful.
Okay, I haven't even heard of that.
You wouldn't.
Okay.
So one of these, like, hey, Sharknado's popular, let's make a million bad shark movies.
Okay.
It was that. And now Hulu thinks I like shark movies.
Oh.
So every time I open up Hulu now, and now it's like nothing but suggestions of shark movies.
Nice.
Yeah. The most recent one that I watched a little bit of was Attack of the Five-Headed Shark.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's got to have five.
Yeah, there's a five-headed shark. You know why they had to have five? Because they don't have a special effects budget, and you can make a fairly convincing-looking five-headed shark by using a glove. Literally, scenes where like a gray glove is being superimposed, making it look like it splashes out of the water, and it's supposed to be a five-headed shark attacking people. It's amazing.
I oddly respect that rationale.
I'm gonna have to find this one for you.
The reason we bring it up is because New York Post, just talking about science, right? Apparently, robots can now grow human organs. Scientists at the University of Washington School of Medicine have developed an automated system that uses robots to produce human mini organs from stem cells. According to Science Daily, the ability to mass produce organoids promises to expand the use of mini organs in basic research and drug discovery. This is a new secret weapon in our fight against disease. So before, scientists would grow cells for biomedical research by culturing them into flat sheets. But these were too simplistic to truly mimic the ways that true cells behave. So more recently, researchers have had some success growing these cells into more complex and three-dimensional structures called mini organs. This new development, however, allows them to produce these organoids at a rapid pace. It's the first time researchers have been able to mass produce these mini organs from stem cells. I don't like this because you're basically teaching the robots how to create human versions of themselves. So when you give them their AI and they become self-aware, you've now taught them how to grow their own bodies.
It's only a matter of time.
It's like vision.
It's only a matter of time.
But different.
Yeah, taking over.
What's the point of people now?
It's a true story, you know? Well, you know what? But based off of the content of the show this morning and where society is heading, maybe we'd all be better off having the place run by robots.
Yeah, you know what? I welcome our robot overlords.
If you go back to Isaac Asimov and the three rules, you know, for robots, I'll take that right now.
Welcome the cleansing fires of Ragnarok.
Well played.
Robot overlords that will rise from the ashes.
Well played, sir.
Coming up next, Jeremy Piven is at the House of Comedy tonight. Tickets are on sale. You can find out more information by going to houseofcomedy.net. We will we'll be joined by Jeremy Piven in studio next.
Miss any?
Ooh,
It's like become this thing now where
we are Jeremy Piven-less.
I know. I try to throw something at Drew to get him to crack up before we go on the air. There's like a numerous other people that would be like, you know, I emulate. Jeremy Piven got to be late.
Yeah, well, Jeremy Piven is running a few minutes behind. We've been told the GPS led them astray.
We're going to be off on Monday. Just wondering. I was actually doing that as much for the audience as I was to remind Drew and to say, yeah, I'm not going to be here Monday.
Memorial Day it's kind of a cool morning on this station because traditional we have a tradition now several years running of handing over the morning show to the folks from the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons and his crew, and they put together a really, really special show every single Memorial Day with lots of high profile guests, and it's a beautiful show, and it's really well done and really well put together, and I know they've been working really hard on it, so that's going to be on Monday morning. Tom Lyons and the crew from Minnesota Military Radio, which you can hear Sunday mornings at 7 right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Out of CBS, as Memorial Day weekend approaches and Americans around the nation begin to stock up on food that makes for a memorable barbecue, one popular item continues to instill fear in the hearts of many Americans. The question, what's in your hot dog, is one that not too many folks want answered. That's always that was always just the urban myth, that it's chicken beaks and bird toes and stuff. That's always, that's what you always hear when people talk about,
Don't
tell me what's in my hot dog.
Right.
I just don't particularly care to know. Hot dogs.
You are like most Americans.
Yep. Hot dogs are the poster child for scary ingredients, according to Nicole Glenn, Vice President of Marketing for Applegate.
A lot of that's just urban myth.
Yeah. Applegate is a natural and organic meat company. It finds people are terrified about learning the ingredients in the popular barbecue staple. They surveyed 1,000 adults to see how they felt about hot dogs. Right? The key findings in the survey found that 43% of Americans say they are scared to find out what goes into hot dogs, and 33% of Americans avoid eating them altogether because they believe that hot dogs are generally unhealthy due to low-quality meat, artificial ingredients, and chemicals. For those that do eat hot dogs, they found that Americans are 6 times more likely to prefer a hot dog with simple ingredients. Millennials, not fans of hot dogs. I'd ask Sam. She's on. Oh, Sam, you like hot dogs? You down with the hot dogs?
Oh, is this going to be one of those stories that's going to make me hate every hot dog?
No. We're just talking about 40% of Americans are afraid to know what's in their hot dogs, but it says millennials, generally speaking, are not fans of hot dogs.
I'm not like, no. Yeah, I don't consider myself a fan of hot dogs. I prefer super fancy sausages.
Yeah.
With like, but like somebody, different like chicken and cheese and whatever. I'm not like a hot dog
person. If you're at a barbecue, though, you'll have a hot dog.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, what constitutes a fan? I mean, that's always bugs me about these surveys. Not fans of hot dogs. Well, what constitutes a fan of a hot dog?
Yeah.
Someone who likes hot dogs?
Yeah.
Maybe hot dog sales are down.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's see. Those 18 to 34 avoiding them, while 24% of millennials say they never buy hot dogs. The survey by Applegate also found that nearly half of the women questioned are more put off by the ingredients in hot dogs than men. 37% of men answered said they would rather not know. It's not a matter of I don't want to know. I just don't care. You know, I know the hot dogs that I buy. We don't have hot dogs, you know, very, very often. I usually do I do two hot dogs, and then I do one with ketchup, and then I do the other with mustard. Unless I go like the Western style, where I do barbecue sauce and bacon and cheese. It's really good. I guess I've just now explained people that are a fan of hot dogs.
Yes,
I don't have them very often, but I guess you could say that I'm a fan of hot dogs.
Yeah. Well, what else are you gonna get when you go to the ballpark? I mean, you gotta have a hot dog when you go to the ballpark, right? I mean, that's sort of the crucial part of the whole experience.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Beer and a hot dog.
You don't go to ballparks.
That's right. Yeah. I have in the past. Just haven't in a while.
I invited you to the ballpark today. You.
I know.
I can't get anybody to go with me.
I am.
Some of us have to work.
Some of us are still in like this bizarro recovery mode because I feel like.
Could have had a hot dog.
This untold amount of damage has been done to my head after these root canals. Well, Sam, thankfully you're in there. Drew gets to hear all of my wacky theories of why half of my face is numb and I still have this little headache on the side of my head. And it's just been so I need to make sure that I'm in the best shape possible because tomorrow I need to be in good shape for solo. That's we have the show to do, too, but I need to be in good shape. Right.
Yeah, there's this little thing called the show that we got to do tomorrow as well. But yes, the premiere of Solo tomorrow night.
I was not in good shape when I went and saw Deadpool 2, and I think it Deadpool 2, and I think it tainted my view.
Oh, it absolutely did. That movie was fantastic, and you were like, I don't really care for it.
Everything sucks.
Yeah, you were bothered. Drew was bothered.
That I would say I was confused.
Yeah.
For as much
I don't like everything.
Yeah, you do.
That's not true.
You buy every DVD you walk past.
That is also not true.
But I am familiar enough with your movie taste to have a pretty good gauge of whether or not a movie falls into something you would like or you didn't. So when you said you didn't really care for Deadpool, I was very surprised.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a hot mess.
Yeah, well, it's because your face is a mess.
Your face is
a hot mess.
That is a true story.
You projected your face onto the movie.
Every morning for the past 2 weeks before I can do work, I have to go into the shower and soak my head under hot water to get rid of a headache.
You're going
to
watch Deadpool 2 again when your face isn't a hot mess.
Oh,
and you're going to love it.
I had every intention of buying the Blu-ray when it comes out.
I mean, oh, I know.
Without even seeing it a second time. So, out of ABC News, two South Florida residents are suing McDonald's. They're claiming the fast food giant is forcing customers to pay for cheese on its signature quarter pounder and double quarter pounder burgers, even if they only want plain burgers.
Right, right. So what's happening here is McDonald's has a set price for their burgers. But, you know, a quarter pounder with cheese is whatever, $1.99, let's say.
For the sake of argument.
And sure. If you go, I'd like a quarter pounder but no cheese, they still charge you the $1.99. So these idiots are looking at that like, wait a second, I'm paying for the cheese when I asked for the cheese to be taken off. When you could just look at it as like, no, when you order it regular, you get free cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're getting free cheese on that thing.
Totally.
They are not charging you for the cheese.
That's, yeah. Yeah, you know what? Hold on a second. You know what? Hold on. I hadn't even thought about it, but you are absolutely right. We go to Culver's, like we have like our set. Yeah. We go to Culver's like once a week, right? Usually it's Wednesday or Thursday. And all four of us have our set items that we get. Mine changes on occasion because I like to spice things up. But all four of us, for the most part, get the same thing. But we're all very specific. The boys just get plain cheeseburgers, nothing else on them, right? I do the same thing with like a chicken sandwich.
Right.
And I'm not once did I ever go,
I
should be getting a discount because I'm not asking for blank.
I'm not getting all the pickles. Yeah. No, you don't get the discounts for the things they take off.
Right.
That's the price. If you want extra things, they may charge you more. But now what do you want? You want a penny amount associated with every topping and you want to get a discount for it when you get, okay, hold the ketchup. I'm trying to be frugal here.
They're seeking.
I brought my own mayonnaise.
Class action status on behalf of the plaintiffs. According to the lawsuit, McDonald's has for years sold the quarter pounder, that pounder, double quarter pounder, and the with cheese options as four separate items on the menu. Whatever.
No!
So I do believe, real quick, as a programming note, I do believe we're going to be joined by Jeremy Piven here in just a moment.
I saw Sam bolt out of the studio. I think Jeremy Piven may have arrived.
I think the plan, we're going to try to see if he can hang out a little bit after the show and record a podcast to check out. So this is going to be a shorter conversation, hopefully, with actor Jeremy Piven,
and then spend some time
and do a podcast afterwards.
Yeah. So keep an eye on the Justice of Drew feed on the iHeartRadio app. If we are able to, do a little post-show podcast with Jeremy Piven, that'll be posted up shortly after the show. So go download the iHeartRadio app, subscribe to the Justice and Drew channel, and keep an eye on that today.
Who's worse in this McDonald's lawsuit, by the way? The people that are actually complaining or the lawyers that are pushing this on? Because they said the lawsuit claims that they ceased to separately display the products for purchase on the menus at some point in time. So, yeah, they're all horrible. I'm just going to go that route.
Yeah, everybody associated with this is pretty awful.
I'm just going to go the route of saying they're all bad.
Just look, take the glass half full approach and just look at it as like, oh no, I get free cheese.
You know what? When I go to Culver's this week, I'm going to see if I can get a discount. If I don't put any, I'm not putting any ketchup. I don't want to get charged with the. I don't want to get charged with the ketchup, and we'll see how quickly the 16-year-old who gets my order laughs in my face.
Yeah.
When I ask for a discount because I didn't order any pickles.
Oh, it won't be laugh. It'll just be utter confusion. All right. And we are pleased to be joined here in the final moments of the show. Jeremy Piven.
How are you guys, man?
Well, excellent. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Dude, I'm legitimately geeked out, man. Can I just tell you?
We need to warn you. This is going to be like the most Chris Farley-esque interview you've probably ever done. Because it's just going to be a bunch of, we really like your movies, man.
You occupy so much shelf space in my movie collection at home. When Drew told me that you were coming on the show, I was a bit beside, and I don't normally geek out, man, but it is an absolute pleasure to be sitting here in studio with you, dude.
Listen, man, you guys are a couple of men of taste, so I celebrate you. See, that's one of those things where I'm celebrating you guys, but I'm celebrating myself at the same time.
You should.
Yes.
You should celebrate yourself.
Celebrating the fact that we like you so much.
Well, God bless both of you. Now, if you only had some headphones that worked, I would celebrate you even more. Hold on.
While you're looking at those headphones, I'll give you the details. You're going to be at the House of Comedy tonight. Doors open at 6:30. Show is at 7:30. Tickets are $30. You can find out more information. I'll tweet out a link as well. Go to houseofcomedy.net. Again, Jeremy Piven appearing at the House of Comedy tonight.
Yes, listen, I'm appearing in a mall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just want to say that the end of the road for actors is dinner theater. So this isn't the end of the road for me, but I can smell it from here.
Look, Tiffany,
does that make any sense from you?
Tiffany got her start at a mall. So you can just look at this as a new beginning.
And the finish. You begin and end at malls. I'm scared of malls, and yet I'm performing at one.
Right.
Listen, we're having so much fun, man, and the room is incredible. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Chris Farley. I started at Second City in Chicago, which is where I'm from, with Chris Farley. That's how old I am. And they had to separate us into two separate companies because we were kind of wild back in the day. And
right.
Chris was as wild as they come and a genius, and God rest his beautiful soul. And so I started by doing sketch comedy and improv, and then, you know, ended up going to conservatories to study acting and blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting because people are like, you're doing stand-up? And all roads have led to stand-up for me, and I'm not just saying that. I've been such a fan of the form forever, and it's the only form that I haven't tried, you know, because I've been on the stage my whole life and done film, TV, and whatnot. And so here I am, and it's daunting because you're the writer, director, star, editor, producer, you're everything.
Right.
And I've been looking for that type of freedom my whole life, and now I have it. And it's incredible, and I'm having so much fun. I'm, you know, just, it's my perspective on life and what I think is funny, and stories from sets, mm-hmm. impersonations, and just, I'm loving it.
How long ago did you do your first set? What was that like?
Last night was my first set.
No way.
I'm just kidding. No, can you? I want you to pay your hard-earned money while I figure out how to do this.
Test material on the audience, right?
Yeah. No, I've been, you know, I first got up with the great Russell Peters, you know, because they asked me to do some charity, and I have the biggest heart in Hollywood. Said no one, by the way. But I do, seriously, I love doing charity, and this is one of those situations where it's Make-A-Wish for Kids, and I got up there and had to host with Russell, and I've been, you know, thrown into hosting positions, and I never knew why exactly. And last year, I was doing a TV show, and we would shoot a 12, 14-hour day, and I would go and find a stage to get up, and I would be thinking, what am I doing up here? And now it makes sense. I get it. I was preparing for this moment.
What's the difference in the level of satisfaction? Because watching you in films, it legitimately looks like with every role that you do, I mean, whether it's, you know, your gross point blank, or even like in Black Hawk Down, it seems like you are legitimately enjoying yourself in the character that you are portraying. What's the difference in level of satisfaction from when you, you know, do a movie and when you get up on stage?
Well, first of all, it's a great question. It's your job to inhabit the roles fully, not judge your characters. You may not agree with the ideology of your character, you know, and you know, you can't, literally, you extract that, and you just play him with, and you give that character as much integrity as you possibly can give it, and that's your job, and I love it. And, you know, coming from a theater family, just the idea of having a job, getting paid to act is a blessing. And then on top of that, the fact that I can go onto a stage now and write it myself and guide the whole thing myself. And it's up to you. Now it's daunting, and that type of freedom is overwhelming and scary, but it's incredible. So I'm actually more excited, if that makes any sense, just because sure. it's on me. It's on me. If I bomb, it's not the writers. It's not the guy that put it together. It's not the, you know, the head of the studio, whatever. It's all on me right now. And it's really, really fun and exciting. And I am having the time of my life right now.
But if you're successful, too, if you're getting that reaction, then you're also going, yeah, and I that and this is all me now, as opposed to, you know, me portraying a character that somebody else designed and wrote.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, it's hard to compare the two, because, for instance, with Ari Gold, what I would do is if let's say a line wasn't hitting, right? What I would do is I would go, okay, well, wait a minute. If I play him as if he thinks it's really funny and it isn't funny, then that's funny.
Right.
So I played a guy who thought he was the funniest guy in the room and he wasn't, but that made it funny, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Because we all know those guys.
Absolutely.
Something's happening. I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm talking too close to the mic.
No, that was me. I'm going to, I made an executive decision here that we're going to run a little long because we want to spend...
Because I talk a lot.
You. No, because we're such huge fans and we want to spend some more time with you.
Are people going to come to the mall tonight at 7:30?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course they are, because we told them to. And people always listen. Do
yeah, we have a lot of influence.
Yeah.
Not really. No, but if they're listening, they love and celebrate you guys.
I didn't want to tell you this. This is actually a podcast. You're not even on the air.
It's 11 people listening and 9 of your family.
Yeah, it's not going to be posted till next week. So it's.
Oh, okay. I got to go. Sorry. No, if you know what people, they go to the Mall of America and they go to the fourth floor to the House of Comedy. And we're just going to pack them in and have the time of our lives. I got my buddies, Jeremy Piven and friends. And by the way, he really is my friend, Adam Hunter, who's just a killer on stage. And he's opening for me. And to be honest with you, I'm a dummy to put him on before me because he's that good. And if I was smart, I'd put a guy that was viciously mediocre in front of me so I could slay. But this guy is a killer. And, you know, it's funny. Last night was our first show here in the area, and people were just... You know, they were loving it. And, you know, to go out on a school night, I know is not easy, but it's worth it. You show up, we have a great time. And I, being from the theater, I know that there's an obligation to entertain people. So I don't take this lightly.
How many, you've done what, some 70 some odd movies? What, where are you at now in terms of your film career? It's got to be up there, right?
Yeah, it's somewhere around there.
Are you going for a record?
Do you have a number
that you want to hit? And then, or did you hit it? And now you're doing the comedy.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I you know, to be totally honest with you, you guys hit on something. I don't know what is wrong with me. Like, I just never took a break. I never thought of it. It wasn't even an option. And then I looked up and I go, wait a minute, I'm still single. I'm 200 years old. What in God's name am I doing? And you're absolutely right. I do need to space it out a bit. I have a movie that I did with Jamie Foxx called All Star Weekend that he wrote, and it's his directorial debut. And I just had so much fun. And that was such, it's all comedy. And I think that kind of led me into this because there were a lot of stand-ups that were there that we would check with and see, are you guys feeling this? And they were. And by the way, there's no community that's more honest than the African-American community. If it's not funny to them, they're not going to laugh. And they're going to give it to you straight. They're not going to be pretentious and go, oh, my God, that was so good. You were incredible. Oh, my God, wasn't he amazing? That was so funny. They're not going to do that. They're going to go, nah, it wasn't working, man.
Talking with Jeremy Piven tonight, House of Comedy. Doors are at 6:30. Show is at 7:30.
I would be remiss if I didn't bring up one of my favorite roles that you were in. And so many of your roles, looking back now, they seem like they were ahead of their time. So many of the choices that you made of projects that you were in and characters that you played were definitely ahead of their time. I'm thinking specifically of your work on PCU.
Yeah, and real quick, this is how the text exchange went. He texted me, I get to ask him about PCU. I responded with, I get to ask him about Serendipity. So that's...
I love it. It's a love fest.
Is that is when you're choosing your projects and when you're choosing your roles, is that something that maybe played into some of your decisions, or did it just sort of work out that way? That, I mean, I'm thinking back to your work on The Ellen Show, which was a show that was definitely a little bit ahead of its time. PCU, Serendipity, even the character of Ari Gold, I think you can look at it now with the benefit of some retrospect in the history and go, that character was definitely ahead of the time that it was being played in.
Yeah, my father, who was my acting teacher from the time I was a kid, said success to him as an actor simply means that you have a choice. Because the reality is most actors have no choice. You take the one job you somehow miraculously got. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to sound dramatic. It's just that the first 40 movies I did before Entourage, every one of those characters was a tiny little role that I, you know, was lucky enough to audition and get, and then I bring 8 different options with the language and keep going, and I may piss some people off on the day because they're like, well, what are you doing? You're continuing to improvise. But at the end of the day, they look and they go, wow, this is really cool. Hey, Jeremy, we're going to add you to this scene. And that was literally how I made my bones as an actor. So I didn't really have very many choices, to be honest with you. I just didn't. You take what audition you get, and you have to like win that role out, mm-hmm. and then you work. And that's the way it is. And by the time I got Entourage, I mean, you have to look at that pilot. I had one scene in the pilot. And at the time I was lucky enough where I'd progressed, where I was being offered leads in TV shows, executive producer, blah, blah, blah. And with Entourage, I was, you know, billed last. They said, listen, you know, we just, you're going to be, you know, a part of a whole here. It's going to be an ensemble, and it's one scene. They called it a fringe player. You're going to be a fringe player, you know. So we didn't even know if the character would continue. We had no idea. So it's up to me. And that was kind of a metaphor for all the work that I'd done before. It was up to me to kind of take something and explore and heighten the character and try to make something more out of it. And that's my job. So I'm loving it. And I guess with stand-up right now, because I would always be, you know, writing and rewriting and trying to explore and heighten these characters with the language, that's how I arrived at stand-up, because now I'm writing all my own stuff.
Right.
So I get to write the greatest roles that I can for myself. And listen, you know, not all of it's going to work, but then it's my job in front of a live audience. If something doesn't quite, it doesn't go the way I planned, I've got to save it. And I've got to trust it that, like, okay, that didn't go well. Well, how can I possibly get this, get to the point where I find a button, find a laugh, find an end to the story? So that's, and you know, keeps you on your toes.
It sounds like, specifically with the Ari Gold character, that, I mean, you really forged your own path there with really the way you embraced that character and the life that you brought to that character made him such an entire. When I think back on Entourage, I loved that show. I never missed an episode. But the first thing I think of is Ari Gold. I mean, that you know.
Well, but believe me, if you read the pilot, you wouldn't have remembered Ari Gold. You know, and everyone said to me, even my agent at the time said, "Why would you take? You're being offered the lead on NBC at the time. Why would you take the smallest character in an ensemble piece for a fraction of your quote?" You know, and then it's because it's not about money. It's about finding the best work and the best role and learning, and that's what it was all about. So, you know, I jumped in and had a blast and tried to contribute on the highest level that I possibly could. And who knew? Everyone, you know, that had read it and thought about it, even my mom, who was also my acting teacher from the time I was a kid, and one of the stories I tell on stage is that to this day I run lines with my mother. So imagine my mom was playing drama turtle E. Vince. My mom was playing all the characters.
That's funny.
And running lines with me.
That's real.
So imagine like the language my mom had to witness. Do you know what I mean? And I never offended her. I can't do it on this show right now, but I do it on stage. I launch into the like the most offensive rant that Ari has on stage, you know, and my mom just he's very comfortable with it. And she just gives me notes, you know, it's not offended at all. I could say the craziest stuff.
Did the vision of when you first became an actor, did that end up matching your career? And how does your career and the success in your career kind of play into the fact that you're now finding you're not challenging yourself by going out and doing this comedy like it will be tonight?
You know, I would love to say that I had a vision.
That was probably the way I was going to phrase it the first time, and I was like, I'll go this route.
No, I absolutely had no vision. I mean, that's, I think part of my problem as a human being is that I never really planned stuff out. I was always kind of like, you know, living in the moment, trying to be as present as possible. I mean, listen, growing up in Chicago, the brass ring for us was working on stage. You know, being a stage actor, and then it was being at Second City and trying to be the best improviser you could. And then, so I never really got ahead of myself. I never thought about fame or any of that stuff. And I think that worked in my favor. Mm-hmm. And I think this generation right now, everyone is famous. Yeah. Everyone is a celebrity. Everyone has their own social, their own Instagram. Everyone is taking pictures of their appetizers, thinking that everyone needs to know what they're eating at that moment. And I think people get distracted from the fact that we got to pay our dues in this life. And I hate to be, this sounds like a TED talk, and I apologize. But listen, I think we're all about the same generation. And I think that we got lucky in the way that we had to work our butts off, and there were rites of passage, and that's what it was all about. I hear music, and this means I have to leave and stop talking.
Yeah, we are. Unfortunately, we ran a little long, but we are unfortunately due out of time. Jeremy Piven, man,
Oh no, I'm not leaving.
Okay,
then, no, you know, I will be staying here. You guys will come back tomorrow morning. I'm still going to be here.
Well, works for me.
Yeah, we'll record. We'll record more with you if you want to stick around, because we could talk to you for an hour.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
House of Comedy tonight. Doors at 6:30. Show at 7:30. Tickets at $30. Go to houseofcomedy.net for more information.
Hang out. We'll take pictures afterwards.
Be a lot of fun.
Thanks, man.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. So I can read about myself and gain my. If you have-